I mean, listen, we're talking about practice.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is KETR's Locker Room, your sports podcast for Northeast Texas. Each week, we look at the biggest headlines in sports and highlight local sports stories. Here's your hosts.
Hello and welcome to another KETR's Locker Room. This week, we're going to be talking about quite a lot of stuff, and we're hoping to have a local guest later on in the week, probably for the Friday episode. But today, we're talking about Josh Hamilton, and we're going to talk about the Rangers in the second segment of the show. We'll also talk NHL playoffs. We'll bring Mark, our hockey expert, in. We're going to do a quick update on the Aaron Hernandez situation. And then we're going to finish up the show with a chat with our local soccer guru, Ben Lamp, who's going to tell us what's going on in the Confederations Cup that's down to the semifinal. So we'll talk about all that. But first, to start off the show, doing the controversial question of the week. And I heard this on ESPN yesterday, so I can't take the credit for this. But they asked the question, if the Angels were willing to buy half of his contract and take half the length of his contract, would you take Josh Hamilton back?
That's a hard question. That's a real hard question. It depends what Josh Hamilton will show up, honestly. The past 3 years of Josh Hamilton, yes. Like, when he was with the Rangers, I think it was a risk because he was playing good. He was slugging home runs. He was catching balls like crazy. Until the man died, Josh Hamilton was worth, you know, taking the risk of putting on the team. But now, yeah. I think since he moved to Los Angeles, I don't know if it's the attractions that's getting him off or maybe just the life in L.A., but he hasn't been playing like Josh Hamilton is supposed to be playing. So right now, I would say no, I wouldn't do it.
Right. Well, what do you think the problems are that Josh is doing this? Do you think it's like related to what Albert Pujols went through last year? Like when he came in, he wasn't doing that great at first, and then he finally got it going?
I think it's new town, you know, new city, new atmosphere. Like in Texas, it's really, I mean, it's a lot to do in Texas, but California is California.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not easy playing for a team in Los Angeles because you have so many distractions. You got movie stars, celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think his game hasn't just depleted. I just think that he's like living the good life. He's in California. He has a brand new $100-something million contract. So, I mean, I don't think his game is really not gone. It's just that he's thinking about something else other than baseball.
Right. Well, how about this? You think maybe Josh Hamilton has gone off so much because his support system isn't there. Like the Rangers,
yeah.
We had a bunch of people that were his accountability partners to keep him from going back to drugs and alcohol and strippers and all that he dealt with. That was a really big problem when he first got drafted by the Cincinnati Reds. And really, that's the reason that the Rangers could pick him up as cheaply as they did, and that he was honestly well underpaid for his production the entire time that we had him, because he was signed for not very much money.
I think that may work, because you know some athletes in today's sports, contracts basically, it's like a report card.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you play so good, we're going to give you a contract extension. If you play really well, we'll give you like $100 million.
Yeah.
So I believe the price that you give Josh Hamilton can always affect his pay, because if a person is getting underpaid, they're always going to perform better. But if they're getting overpaid, they're always going to underachieve, because it's like, okay, I got a lot of money. I don't have to really do this as great as I used to. I mean, everybody knows I'm great. Mm-hmm. So I think with the Rangers, the fact that it was like a close-knit community with the Rangers, and when you go to the Angels, it's like you got Pujols, you got Trout, you have all these other people that's like cold around you. It's like, so well, I don't have to be that cold. I have Albert Pujols right in front of me,
right?
So he can hit a couple home runs. I hit a single or a double, I'm good. I'm still getting paid.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's what the problem is.
That's true, and you see that with like with other players. Like when Chris Johnson signed his big extension, his numbers dropped ridiculously,
dramatically.
And you see that with a lot of other players that they sign the big contracts. Dwight Howard, and then just their production, their character is really revealed. and it shows what they are, and they're not trying to make that big money anymore. They have it.
Yeah, they have it. I think that plays a big role in it. Whenever you give an athlete like $100 million, especially in baseball, you know, baseball, you know, the richer your owner is, the more money you really get. So I think in baseball, the fact that he's in Los Angeles, he has a lot of money. Like, he may be tempted to do some of those things he did in the past. Because, you know, there's a lot of things that get you distracted in Los Angeles. I mean, Hollywood, and you know, you can go see Kobe and the Laker games, you know. But, I mean, it's certain places I believe players cannot play in. Like, the hardest places to play in for me, I would say, is New York and Los Angeles. Because those are, like, the two biggest cities in America.
Yeah.
So, for playing for the Rangers, like in Arlington or something, I mean, it's like a nice country setting, you know. He could be chill, you know. But Los Angeles, that's big lights, big city. Like, that takes a lot out of a person.
Yeah. Ben, you want to weigh in on this at all? You have any opinion?
I think that I completely agree that the more you get paid, the less you want to work for it. Because if you already have the money, then why should you work hard?
Exactly.
I believe that you still should work hard, but, I mean, you don't have that motivation there anymore. It's kind of like with grades in college, you know.
Right.
If you already are making straight A's and you don't really need to study that much, you're not going to be as motivated to study. And then when you hit that one big test and you haven't studied for it and then you just bomb, then you're up a creek.
That's very true. Well, what do you think? Would you take Josh Hamilton back if he lost half of his $125 million contract and we only had to pay him $10 million a year instead of 20 or 25. What do you think then?
Right now, I don't know if it's really worth it.
Okay. Do you have a reason, like character issues or like that he's not performing up to the money? What do you think it is?
I think it just comes down to he's not performing as well as he did when he was with the Rangers.
Right. Well, that leads into another thing I want to look at for Josh Hamilton, the stats, which we were talking about before the show started. When he was at Texas, he had a really good average. He hit usually around 15, 20 home runs. He had several years where he hit over 30, including in 2008, his first year with us, 2010 when he hit 32 again. And then 2012, last year, he had 43 home runs, including that record-tying four-homer game back in May of last year. Now, he did really well with us all those seasons. He had an MVP season where he hit 359, and that was the first time we went to the World Series. And he averaged right around 300 hitting the entire time he was here, had a lot of doubles, had a lot of RBIs, over 100 RBIs in three seasons with us. Just really good production like we talked about. And then now let's look at the numbers while he's been at LA. He's played in 72 games so far. He's currently on a three-game stint on the day-to-day injury list. He's going to sit out the Pirates series this weekend. But he's got 57 hits. He's got 13 doubles, 2 triples, only 10 home runs, 25 RBIs, and he's been walked 19 times. Now, get this. In 2009, for instance, he only struck out 79 times. He played 89 games, and he's only played 72 games so far, and he's already struck out 76 times. Now, I know that a lot of that comes from swinging for the fences. You're going to strike out more when you're swinging hard.
Exactly.
But his average, let's look at that. Last year with us, he was at 285, and this year he's at 207. His slugging percentage went from 577 to 378. And his WAR, which is a wins above replacement rating, went from a 3.3 with us down to a negative 0.5. So he's actually costing the Angels wins by being on their roster.
Wow. When I hear stuff like that, two things pop to my head. The first thing, the talent around him is not the talent in you know, Texas. When he was in Texas, he had, like, role players, and he was, like, the main star.
Right.
That's, you know, he had the claw and everything. Like, he was a household name with the Rangers. You put him with Albert Pujols and them other players and the pitching staff they have, I honestly think that the star power is overwhelming him. Because you think about it, it's hard to to say, okay, I'm a superstar, and then you have Albert Pujols right there beside you.
Right.
So, I mean, Albert went through the stage where he struggled, but I think the most of his struggles was he played so long with one team, he just didn't feel comfortable with the new team yet. That right. might be it with Josh Hamilton, but those stats, it just seems to me that he's not worth $20 million a year. Right. I think $20 million is a little bit too much after one season, because he had good seasons, but the 43 home run season, okay, that's the year everybody really wanted him.
Yeah.
And I think the money, just too much money, it just got to his head, because he can't swing the ball right. He can't swing the bat right. I mean, he can't hit the ball. I mean, those are horrible.
Yeah.
T-ball can hit better than that.
That's true. Well, our news producer and director for the station, Mark Hazlett, just joined us. Mark, we've been talking about this question for about 10 minutes now, and I wanted to get your opinion on it. So earlier this week, yesterday I think it was, ESPN asked the question, if the Angels were willing to buy half of Josh Hamilton's contract, would you take him back right now?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
No way.
Why not?
He's a distraction, mm-hmm. I think the Rangers have shown that they were human and that they can be distracted by off-field matters. Honestly, I think that the slump they came out of had, I would say about half of it was due to injuries, and I think the other half was people were distracted by the whole thing with Cruz,
right,
and him possibly having to sit out. And now I don't think Hamilton needs to be back. It would be an enormous distraction. And also, I just don't expect him to be as productive as he was during the, say, for example, the years that the Rangers made the World Series. I think he's not going to be as miserable as he's been for the first half of this season. I think he'll probably, his production will go back to something a bit more like it was, but I don't think he's ever going to be as good as he was. And the Rangers' needs are not, despite the fact that they did come out of a crazy slump where they're having a hard time advancing runners and hitting the ball, that's not what the Rangers need, really.
Right.
They don't need Hamilton. They need defense and pitching, as they always do.
Okay. I just want to say one more thing about Hamilton before we take a break and come back for the second segment of the show, which, by the way, we're also talking about the Rangers as a whole in that second segment. Do you guys think that we already talked about this, me and Jordan, but do you guys think that the reason Josh Hamilton is slumped off so much, is it character? Is it he doesn't have his moral support system? Or do you think it maybe is the drug allegations that he had in the 2012 season? He was accused, it was rather quiet, but he was accused, and there were talks that he was on Ritalin. Now, the reason that they thought this was because Ritalin makes you slow down. It makes you see the ball coming. Everything's moving slower, so you can hit better. And the side effects of getting off Ritalin are being really jumpy. Your heart palpitates a lot faster, and you're really tired all the time. You can't do much. Now, that's also the side effects of taking a lot of caffeine, which is what Josh Hamilton said happened when he was sick and he had all the heart stuff and all that. But what do you think? Could it have been Ritalin? You think that's why he dropped off so much?
Honestly, I just think it's personal character.
Okay.
I mean, if you're a baseball player, you've been playing baseball for so long. I mean, you never lose the sight of a ball coming fast. I mean, people that take the extra drugs for an advantage, I always feel as though, why cheat? Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't cheat before then, why start cheating now? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for Josh Hamilton, I think it's all mental. I think he's just in a whole new place. He's trying to be a Josh Hamilton that he's not. So that's why I think he's his problem.
Right. Mark?
He's been swinging at a whole lot of first pitches, which is, that's a real quick way to start putting out some terrible numbers, is not getting in quality at-bats. It's really hard to develop a rhythm at the plate, and you're not making the opposing pitcher work very hard if you're swinging at the first pitch. So that's part of it, but I also think that there has to be something mental going on as well.
Right.
Without any evidence to suggest anything going on with performance-enhancing substances, whether it's legal or whatever, I don't have any comment at all on that.
Okay. Ben, do you have anything you want to add?
I think it just goes back to his character. I think he's just trying to live up to the name of Josh Hamilton. and he can't anymore.
Right.
And he's trying too hard, and he doesn't have the fan support behind him. He doesn't have the players around him to do it, and I think he's just trying too hard.
All right, well, that's going to do it for the first segment. We'll be back in just about a minute. You're listening to KETR's Locker Room.
There must be 50 ways to support your station. One you might not have considered is donating your car to KETR. It's easy, and your unwanted car, boat, or truck will help provide quality programming for Northeast Texas. So if making a pledge is not your thing, but you have an old car you no longer need, call 855-KETR-123 to schedule a convenient time to pick it up. Or go to our website, ketr.org, and mouse over support to donate online.
There are different ways of saying thanks. A card, maybe candy or flowers. But one of the best ways to say thank you to your local public radio station is by making a major financial gift, the kind of gift that helps your station continue to serve your community. So think about making a major gift to your public radio station today. And thanks.
All right, we're back here on KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch, Ben Lamp, Mark Hazlett, and Jordan Davis here in the studio. So we talked about Josh Hamilton and the what-if situation, if he would be traded from the Angels to the Rangers, if we would take that for half the money. Now, I want to clarify that this is a what-if statement. It was by no means going to happen, just in case anyone was confused. But let's talk some more about the Rangers themselves and what's actually happening in the baseball world. Now, the Rangers have won 5 straight, including a sweep of the Cardinals, who beat us in the 2011 World Series. And they've taken 6 of their last 10, including taking 3 of 4 from the Oakland A's. They start a 3-game series at Yankee Stadium tonight at 7. So that's an update on what's going on with the Rangers. Now, let's talk about the reasons that they've been more successful. Their batting in the 6 wins has really heated up. They went from averaging about 4.5 runs to averaging 5.5 runs over those 6 wins. They had about 10 hits a game and had just under 6 strikeouts a game. Now, in the 4 losses, they were only averaging 1.25 runs, so that's quite a bit less on the production side. They're only getting about 6.5 hits per game, and they were striking out about the same. So what do you guys think happened with the batting issues? Was that mental, or what do you think happened?
It's a long season. Like, okay. Baseball, I think they play, 162 games?
Yes.
It's going to come a point in time where people just can't hit. I mean, your body's tired. You're playing 3-4 games a week. So, I mean, I think the physical issues of it was the reason why they were slumping. But we all know the Rangers have pretty good hitters.
That's true.
I think the Rangers are one of the best hitting teams in all AL, next to my beloved Red Sox, of course. But I think the batting's going to keep going up and down. The main issue for them is the runs. Like, they need runs because their pitcher needs the runs for support so he can do his thing up on the mound.
Right. Yeah, we talked about Yu Darvish last week. Losing 5 of his last 6 starts, and that's only because the run production hasn't been there.
Pitchers definitely need more help. Like, they got to sling the ball, sling the bat, but they're going to do good.
Right.
I mean, against the Yankees, I don't know, because the Yankees got a pretty good pitching staff with Sabathia and them, but
yeah.
I believe, like, the Rangers are going to be good batting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I think a lot of it was situational hitting. They weren't getting the hits with guys on base. And I think a lot of that is just execution, mental, you know. I tell you what, I was as a fan, I was really concerned with Oakland coming to town. I couldn't imagine a worse time for Oakland to be coming to town.
Yeah,
Rangers having just dropped 4 to Toronto, and they really, I don't know if you can. The season is on the line in June necessarily, but they really did kind of salvage the season with taking 3 of 4 from Oakland there. So I think a lot of it is mental, and I think that as I also agree that the hitting's just going to be on and off all year long. It's just the nature of the game.
Right. Well, you mentioned Toronto. They've actually won 11 straight as of yesterday. I didn't look at the records today, but they had won 11 straight. So it makes that four-game losing streak to them and us losing to them back at home right after the Red Sox look pretty good too. So not all caution flags waving. Don't burn the bridges just yet, folks. The Rangers, it's a long season. We're going to be there. But let's also talk about the pitching in those six games. Now, in the six wins, the pitchers allowed five hits per game. They allowed about 3 to 4 earned runs. They only threw 2.6 strikeouts per game, and they allowed less than one home run a game. It was about a half a home run. Now, in the four losses, they allowed 7.75 hits per game. They allowed 4.5 runs, earned runs. Now, that Yu Darvish allowed one more run, but it wasn't an earned run. There were 4 strikeouts per game, so they're actually getting more strikeouts per game, but that average went up quite a bit because one of the losses was Yu Darvish. And they're allowing exactly 2 home runs a game, so each game there were two home runs allowed. Now, we only have 5 pitchers in the rotation, so do you think it's the mental factor for them too, or do you think maybe like Tepish and Grimm rebounded from having maybe too much exposure, or like we've seen with Darvish, he's throwing well over 100 pitches a game? What do you think it is there?
Well, I mean, honestly, some of them teams was just on a roll when they pitch against them. Like Toronto, man, they have been slinging that bat. Like their team is finally starting to come together. Like you said, Oakland has always been a decent hitting team.
Yeah.
So I don't blame the whole pitching staff because, I mean, they are pitching the best stuff. It's just some of these hitters, these new baseball players just coming in and hitting the ball really well.
Right.
So, I mean, that's going to happen in baseball. I mean, you're going to have bad stats, you're going to have good stats, but the earned runs, that right there is just 4.5 over 4 losses. That's almost 5 runs a game. And
yeah,
if in baseball, if you get 5 runs a game, you're not winning a lot of games. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the main issue with the Rangers.
Right. Well, I have one more thing to talk about on the Rangers before we move on to talking about the Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup Final and then Aaron Hernandez and the soccer stuff. Nelson Cruz, as we heard before the season started, was had allegations against him that he'd been using performance-enhancing drugs, was one of the players named on the Miami Clinic trial that's going on right now. At what point do you think it's safe to say that Nelson Cruz will not be suspended for the season? Because they've moved back when they were supposed to suspend everyone several times already. What point do you think we say, well, they're not going to do anything, or they're going to wait till next season? Just near the end of the season?
Yeah, I really, actually, to tell you the truth, I've been up to my eyeballs in state legislature drama, so
right.
I am not up to speed on Cruz. I'll have to defer to somebody else here in the room,
because okay,
I have been only reading hard news today, outside of the Blackhawks.
Right. Well, I can tell you a few things about the Rangers and Nelson Cruz. The Rangers have been behind him 100%. They've said, whatever happens, we're going to be with you. We're not going to trade you or anything just because of this allegations. Now, he is going to be a free agent coming up, I think, 1 or 2 years from now. So that may be a good contract to talk about trading away. Expiring money is always something that GMs look for. But I don't know. These allegations haven't really gone away, but they haven't really become what you would think they would be. Like, I'm pretty sure Bartolo Colon was on there, Alex Rodriguez, what's his name from Milwaukee? That's Ryan Braun,
I think.
Ryan Braun. And several of these guys have said, well, in the case of Alex Rodriguez, he admitted to it way back, but they've all said that since the big steroids thing, none of them have taken steroids, except for Bartolo Colon, who got caught. But the others have all said, we haven't taken steroids. And Ryan Braun has repeatedly come out and said, I've never taken steroids. These allegations are completely false, blah, 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 blah. And he even had a good, like, 30 or 40 minute TV broadcast of him just making a speech about how he would never take steroids. So if all this stuff proves true and they have taken steroids, I think there's going to be a lot of backpedaling and I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah.
There's a lot of trust that's going to be lost.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, today's game, steroids for some reason in baseball is just the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because like Barry Bonds, they still haven't said anything about him, but I believe he used steroids.
Right.
I knew A-Rod used steroids. I don't understand baseball players. You're getting paid all this money. Why would you not just go to the gym and work out and lift weights like everybody else?
Right.
That steroid, I just don't understand steroids in baseball. Like, I don't understand the competitive edge that it gives you. It really doesn't, because it really hurts your body more than it helps.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these people that's on the list, I believe most of them have taken steroids. They just don't want to be looked at the bad guy, like, you know, be looked at, oh, you lied to us, you're a liar, you're a cheater. So I think that's what they're trying to do with that.
Right. Well, the steroids discussion we've already talked about quite a bit back in the day, but we'll probably update that later on. But that's not a discussion for today. Let's move on to something quite a bit more celebratory, especially for Mark. His beloved Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup Final, and they did it in 6 games, including 3 games that went to overtime, and game one was actually a 3-overtime game. So I'm going to hand it over to Mark now to tell us more about that.
Well, if anybody has a chance to see any of the games, if you didn't watch them, I encourage you to check them out. They're fantastic games. I was telling some friends last night this is a lot like Ali Frazier, mm-hmm. in that you really hate it for one side to lose.
Yeah.
Because they both, it was a very physical series, but for the most part, it was a very clean series. Mm-hmm. They played excellent hockey, except for the Blackhawks kind of looking bad a little bit in Game 3 and the Bruins looking bad for parts of Game 4. Both teams played at or near their top throughout the entire series. It was just mm-hmm. a fantastic series. And as far as the Blackhawks themselves, they can almost sort of feel like they kind of have erased the stigma that followed the franchise around for so many years. They're one of the original 6 teams founded in the late 20s. They won a couple of Stanley Cups in the 30s, had a dry spell in the 40s and 50s. They won 1 Stanley Cup in the beginning of the 1960s, and it looked like they would win a lot more. Bobby Hull had just started playing, and they had lots of other really good players, but mm-hmm. that was the only cup they won with the Bobby Hull teams. They made it to the final 3 more times during that era with Hull and later Stan Mikita, and then they bottomed out for the most part. They were competitive here and there in the 80s and 90s, but they just seemed to be mired. They had one of the worst owners in sports, who mismanaged the team both financially and personnel-wise from public relations. I mean, he did everything wrong to where they were. In 2006, ESPN, the magazine, it was ESPN's Page 2, mm-hmm. Voted him the worst franchise in North American sports.
Wow.
So they really
wow.
bottomed out. And I mean, it was between them and the Clippers.
Oh, right. Yeah. Clippers was horrible.
Both of them now.
Right. And then they finally, in 2010, they finally won a cup. And the turnabout came sadly because of the death of Bill Wirtz, mm-hmm. Their former owner, who passed away in 2006, and his son took over, and his son did things completely differently from the way his father did. And between all the draft picks that they had acquired during the early part of this last decade when they were terrible, they were able to build. So I don't really have anything to say that anybody else hasn't said, just that it was a fantastic series. And if you're interested in what a really good hockey game looks like, then, you know, feel free to check any of those games out. The reason why you might have seen so much stuff about it online today was because the end of last night's game was so dramatic.
Very. I actually thought the Bruins was going to win that game.
Well, so did all of New England and most of Chicago. There was about... it was tied up going into the third period,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and Boston scored with about 7 minutes left to play, and it looked like we're going to have a Game 7 back in Chicago Wednesday night, and with less than a couple minutes to play, Chicago evened the score, mm-hmm. and then less than half a minute after that scored the game winner. and there wasn't enough time left for Boston to do anything. So from thinking that you're looking at a game seven to thinking that you're looking at overtime to realizing that you just won the Stanley Cup, some of the Chicago players seemed just as stunned as anyone.
Right.
So fantastic series. I didn't think there could be anything more freaky in sports after game six of the Spurs Heat series, but honestly, I think that last night was even more over the top than that Spurs game.
I'm actually glad the Blackhawks won because the Bruins beat my beloved Penguins.
Right.
And that really burned me inside. So the fact that the Blackhawks came back and won, I was jumping for joy because I was like, yes, they lost. But the way that they lost, I know it killed the Bruins players. Like, they lost in the last minute and 15 seconds. Like, we could have had a game seven, in which I thought if they went back to Chicago, the Bruins weren't going to win no way. So game seven in Chicago is total Chicago domination.
Right.
So I'm really glad because the Blackhawks got off to a real fast start this year. And I was one that didn't think that they was going to keep it up. But, you know, they did enough, and, you know, they're champions now. But do you think they're going to repeat? You think they got a good chance to repeat?
It's really hard to say. They definitely have a chance. They were able to win the Cup despite the fact that their goaltending was good but not great. That's one of the cliches that you hear in hockey is that, oh, you can't win the Stanley Cup without a great goaltender. Well, actually, the Blackhawks have managed to win two Stanley Cups in 4 years with goaltending that was definitely above average but not top of the league. Corey Crawford is definitely better than most NHL starting goalies, but he's real far from being at the very top of the league. He's notorious for not being able to catch the puck real well. Sometimes he'll let a rebound come out of his glove that shouldn't happen, and he gets beat on the glove side more often than a goalie for a Stanley Cup winning team would get beat. I think he got beat glove side four times during the last game that the Bruins won. So the fact that he's not as solid as some other netminders in the league kind of makes me hesitate to think that Chicago could repeat. But the thing is they have such a strong core of skaters that they're definitely going to be in it. And, of course, the NHL's like the NBA in that everybody makes the playoffs. You have to completely bottom out to not make it in the playoffs. And their guys have proven themselves in the playoffs to the point to where, you know, you're not going to count them out. They're going to be one of these teams that might play over their head a bit in the playoffs.
Right.
If I had to pick somebody, though, I would say Boston next year. I think they're going to be just as good, and they're going to be hungry having come so close.
Right. Well, I have two questions for you before we move on. First, who was the most important factor for this Chicago dominance the last 4 years?
Probably, I would have to say Jonathan Toews.
Okay.
They call him Captain Serious because even though he's a young guy, he carries himself like a veteran. He leads by example.
Right.
And I think that everybody else follows his habits, or at least feels pressure to follow his habits. And I think that even when he isn't showing up on the score sheet with an assist or a goal, I think that his influence is definitely a difference maker for them.
Right. My other question is, do you think the Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones relationship would be something like the Blackhawks owner? Do you think when Jerry Jones is gone, do you think we'll see another revival of a sports team like that?
I don't know anything about Stephen Jones, so I don't have any idea what kind of job he would do, but I think you could pull somebody off the street and they would probably do a better job at managing the personnel side of the Cowboys than Jerry Jones. So, you know, I think he's good at the business and marketing and all that stuff, but his influence on the Cowboys' personnel decisions has been a disaster. And I think that whenever those reins are passed on for whatever reason, whatever context that happens, it'll definitely be an improvement for Dallas.
Right. All right, Mark, thank you very much. We're going to update real quick on the Aaron Hernandez situation, just in case anyone missed last week. He is a Patriots tight end. He played in the Super Bowl, is one of the two tight end stars for the Patriots, along with Rob Gronkowski. Now, an update on what's going on with him. He's had a lot of legal troubles in his entire career. First, when he was drafted, there were drug allegations in Florida. And then last year, he got alleged to have shot at someone and hit them in the face when they went to a strip club in Miami. And then this year, a few days ago, last week, he was at least alleged to be involved in a murder case that's happening. Gosh, what's his name? Odin something is the man that got killed.
Lloyd?
Yeah, Odin Lloyd.
Odin Lloyd
was a 27-year-old Boston man who was killed about a mile or a mile and a half from Aaron Hernandez's house. Now, the reason that they thought Aaron Hernandez might be involved was because Lloyd was dating Aaron Hernandez's girlfriend's sister. Mm-hmm. Aaron Hernandez is dating Shayana Jenkins, and the other Jenkins sister was the one that Lloyd is dating. Now, Lloyd was a good friend with Hernandez and several other Patriots players, and Lloyd went with Hernandez and two others to a party, and then Hernandez and the two other guys came back to the house, and Lloyd wasn't with him. So that was a little bit suspicious, and then they found him in a field Monday morning last week. So that led police to go search Hernandez's house. Now, they went there, and they found that his surveillance equipment had intentionally been destroyed. And then they asked him to hand over his cell phone, which he broke and then gave to his lawyer to hand over to the police. So he was charged officially with obstruction of justice. He will be getting at least that, if nothing else, even if he's not guilty in any other way. So he's going to be getting at least a little bit of jail time, but he'll be involved in courts and a lot of legal disputes for probably a long time. But there's also been a warrant issued, and they are, as of yesterday, searching the back of his house and searching a river near that area. So that's what's going on right now. And also, just in case you haven't heard, we wanted to talk about Doc Clippers is officially been traded to the Clippers. That's been brought in by the news director. We talked about it on the website, but Doc Rivers has been approved. The trade has just gone final by the NBA. So Doc Rivers is now the coach of the Clippers. So this is the first time that a head coach has been traded from one team to the other. Now, we already talked about that quite a lot. We just wanted to give you the news update. But I'm going to get back to Aaron Hernandez. So what do you guys think of this whole situation? You think he's going to be gone from the Patriots no matter what happens here?
I think his NFL career is possibly over.
Okay.
Because the way that many athletes have been getting in trouble, like Chad Johnson, like Roger Goodell has clearly sent a message that he will not be taking part in all of this foolishry that's going on. Because if you think about it, he's been having issues since he came into the league. He's been having issues during the season. So, I mean, at this point, I think the Patriots is going to be like, you know, obviously you can't stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
So, well, you're making us look bad, because he's making the Patriots look bad, because this is one of their best players.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he can't stay out of trouble for nothing. Like, how suspicious can you look when you tear up your surveillance camera and then you tear up your cell phone? Like, it makes it seem like you had something to do with it.
Right.
And then the fact that I saw on SportsCenter they had 15 bags of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone. Yeah. 15 bags, more than five, you're gone. And the fact that he's acting so, like, jittery and like, oh, I gotta get away, like, they showed him running
to his
lawyer
and
then running away from, like, come on, man, if you had nothing to do with it, you wouldn't be doing all of this. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't know about you, Ben, but I think it's over for Hernandez.
I think
that obviously if he's found guilty of murder, or at least being part of a murder, yes, his career is pretty much over.
Okay.
If he's found innocent, then that's kind of a different story. If he's just charged with obstruction of justice, the Patriots will probably end up getting rid of him at some point just because he is making them look bad. But he'll probably get picked up by a lower team for a few years. You know, a lot like other stars who have gone through a lot of legal trouble.
Right.
But I think his career is pretty much on a downhill slope now.
If all else fails, he'll go to the Jets. The Jets will pick them. The Jets will pick up anybody that nobody else wants.
Especially if they're from the Patriots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because Rex Ryan hates the Patriots. So anytime he can get one of their players and use it against him, It still won't work because Sanchez is their quarterback, but he'll probably go to either the Browns or the Jaguars, right, somewhere like that, to say, hey, well, you messed up here, but you can come over here and help us get some money. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's going to win any more Super Bowls, but no, he'll probably go to the Jets.
Right. Well, let's move on from that, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on all the legal stuff that's going on with that. But let's end the day on another more upbeat topic. The Confederations Cup is currently going on, mm-hmm, and it's down to the semifinal. There's four teams. Let's see if I can name them. Brazil, Italy, Spain, and Uruguay, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, tell us what's going on there.
All right. Well, you know, we've got really four really good teams. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, they're all contenders in the World Cup coming up next year in Brazil. They all have really good chances to get to the quarterfinals, if not even the semifinals. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure we'll see at least two of these teams in the finals. We've got Brazil versus Uruguay tomorrow. Brazil, you know, they've got 9 goals in the cup. Uruguay has 11 goals in the cup, but, you know, it's not all about goals. The Brazilian team are playing well, mm-hmm, and they've always played well. These two teams are big rivals, longtime rivals. With Brazil, you've got two pretty strong strikers in Neymar and Joe. And they've got their goalkeeper, Julio Cesar. Mm-hmm. They're all playing very well. They're playing like a team. They're not playing like the Brazil we're used to seeing, but they are playing very well. Mm-hmm. And Uruguay is kind of on a hot streak right now. They've been doing really good in the qualifiers. And they're really doing well in their group. But in my opinion, I think Brazil is the favorite in that game. They're a stronger team, and I think they can do it better down the stretch. And then the next day on the 27th, we have Spain versus Italy. Mm-hmm. Spain is obviously the World Cup. They're the world champions, the reigning world champions. They're a really, really strong team. They've got a lot of strengths, not a lot of weaknesses. Italy is typically a really good team, but they've got a lot of fresh faces, a lot of young stars right now. They have a good chance to at least show a chink in Spain's armor, but I honestly think that Spain is going to win that one. You know, they're the world champions. They've got a lot of experience on the team, and they kind of have that intimidation factor against these young Italians. And really the only weakness that you can say against Spain is that their group wasn't very strong. You know, they specifically Tahiti, mm-hmm, a newcomer to this whole international scene, was the bottom runner in their group. And then they had Nicaragua, I'm sorry, who's not typically a very good team. And the only other team that they had in their group that was any sort of trouble was Uruguay. Mm-hmm. So I see Spain winning that one. And overall, I think it's going to come down to Brazil versus Spain. And I think Spain is just going to defeat Brazil. And for the FIFA World Cup coming up in a year, I think we could probably see Spain coming out again.
Okay. Can you tell me who your favorites are in each of these? Like, who are you cheering for in the Confederations Cup and in the World Cup?
In the Confederations Cup, I would really like to see Brazil beat Spain. I think that would be a cool story to see. Mm-hmm. And my favorite, the team that I want to see win the World Cup is Germany. I really like their players. I have a lot of respect for their team. Mm-hmm. They're always very systematic, very driven towards winning.
Right. Well, why? Well, not that, but what do you think the chances are of Germany and Brazil? Like, give me a percentage of each one.
Of Brazil winning the Confederation Cup?
Mm-hmm.
I think they probably maybe have about a 30% chance of beating Spain. Spain is just, they're really big. They're really big right now.
Okay.
They've got a lot of really strong players, and Brazil's not playing up to the level that they could be.
Yeah.
And Germany, making it all the way to the finals and winning the World Cup, I don't see a very high percentage. I'd love for them to, but I don't see a super high percentage. My favorites to be in the final for the World Cup is Spain, and I'd say either Argentina or Brazil.
Okay.
At this point.
So a rematch maybe of the CONCACAF.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got two more questions for you. First, what do you think America's chances is in the World Cup?
In the World Cup, I think we have a high chance of maybe doing what we did in the last World Cup, really surprising people and probably at least getting to the quarterfinals. Okay. But I really, as of right now, I just don't see America going extremely far in the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. And my other question is, can you tell us what the Confederations Cup is, like how it got organized, anything like that?
The Confederations Cup, it's kind of like a precursor to the World Cup. It's a much smaller cup. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot less teams. This year, they only had two groups. They had Group A and Group B. They only had eight teams competing in the Confederations Cup. It's just another championship for teams to show what they can do. It's also kind of just a way for the teams to not get, you know, lazy during this off time before the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Well, just some history on the CONCACAF World Cup. The United States has been in the semifinals twice. They got third place in the 1999 CONCACAF, and then in 2009, they came in second. They were in runner-up to be in the final. So pretty good in that case, but not very good performance in the World Cup. I just want to ask Jordan, what do you think your chances are? Who are you cheering for, yada, yada, for World Cup?
Well, I really don't watch a lot of soccer.
Okay.
But when I do watch soccer, I prefer Dos Equis. No, I really like Brazil. Like, I like the way Brazil play. It's mm-hmm. like, it's something interesting about Brazil. Because when I see America play, it's like, okay, we have so much pride, but sometimes America sucks.
That's true.
So
that's very true.
Brazil, it seems like all of their players, they play from like the first minute to the last minute. They give it their all. Like every time I see Brazil play, bodies are flying. Right. Like goals, like when they do the goals and the celebrations, like they have the best celebrations. Mm-hmm. Brazil people go crazy when their team score. And I just like the fact like that it's in their own backyard. I just got to give it to Brazil. I don't see I think that it's in their backyard. They can defeat Spain, but Spain is going to be like, Spain is tough. Mm-hmm. Like they have rugged players. Like they have no problem beating you up.
That's true.
The team we was talking before the show, they beat some team like what 11-1 or something like that.
Yeah,
that was Tahiti.
Spain played against Tahiti and they won 10-0. Of mm-hmm. course, that game was kind of, I don't know why those two teams were together so early on in the Confederation Cup, but you know Tahiti had. It was only their second international appearance, mm-hmm. And you know Spain's the defending world champions, and they've got strikers like Fernando Torres and David Villa. Spain's definitely a big dog to beat.
Mm-hmm. Well, just wanted to give you guys a preview of what's coming up, maybe on Friday, and then hopefully in the next few weeks, we're going to be doing a lot more football focus. So. North Texas, rejoice. I know everyone loves football
around
here.
Yes, football's back.
And we're even going to be doing a fantasy football draft special. I'm going to be bringing in a few draft experts, including myself. I've had a fantasy league the past 8 years. So, and I usually average about 5 or 6 a year, too. So I'm way too into fantasy football, for any of those that care to know. And if, you know, for my birthday coming up on July 10th, if anyone wants to send me something for that celebrates fantasy football, I'd be more than happy to take that, you know, whatever. But that's the upcoming shows in the next few weeks, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on everything else going on in the sports world, including Wimbledon is happening right now. So we'll be able to talk about all that stuff. But just wanted to tell you about that. This is KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch.
I'm Jordan Davis.
I'm Ben Lamp.
And we will see you later this week.